You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 217A by Rudolf Steiner, translated by Catherine Krieger. It's Essays and Addresses to the Youth, entitled Youth and the Etheric Heart. This is Part 10. These are various addresses that I am trying to separate in a certain way. This section is addresses given in 1924. Quote, I have never seen anything inscribed in the subconscious of young people but this. The world must be constructed anew from the ground up. Arnheim, July 20th, 1924. A small intro, still part 10, entitled The Nature and Aims of the Youth Movement, from Rudolf Steiner's report in the weekly newsletter, entitled What is Happening in the Anthroposophical Society, News from Members, Volume 1, Number 24, June 22nd, 1924. I was able to meet twice with the Breslau Youth Group of the Anthroposophical Society, a fact that is deeply satisfying to me. Individual members of this circle spoke with open hearts and earnest souls, and I saw receptive hearts and souls before me as I spoke. We spoke of the character of the youth movement and the goals our times demand. The participants displayed a great deal of idealism, concern, and goodwill. It is to be hoped that young adults will make a concerted effort to make a reality of what impels their hearts toward the spiritual world, and that they will not be weakened by lack of unity. That's the end of that short intro. Address and question and answer session at the Breslau-Kobervitz Conference, Breslau, June 9, 1924. From the conference organizer's welcoming address, we would like to thank Dr. Steiner, Mrs. Steiner, and the other members of the Executive Council for being with us today. Let us be aware of the tremendous significance of Dr. Steiner's presence among us, in light of the cosmic scope of the tasks he faces, so that we may receive what he has to say to us with the respect it deserves. Let us greet him as someone who knows how to be young, younger than we ourselves can be. Our seeking is all we have to offer him. More cannot be expected of us. Our numbers include not only graduate students, but also business people and civil servants. Most of us are not members of the Anthroposophical Society. Comment from a female participant. When we look at flowers, stones, or stars, or whenever we look out into the world, we become prematurely old. We cannot find a way of looking at these things that allows us to be youthful. So we give up looking outward and attempt only to experience the youthfulness within ourselves. But to find our place in the world, we are looking for a worldview that allows us to be youthful. We have approached Dr. Steiner with this in mind. Rudolf Steiner. Many thanks for your warm words of welcome. I would like to return them in kind, because I have believed for many years that what is going on in your hearts, souls, and minds is of tremendous importance for the future. Let me assure you that anyone involved in the world in an unbiased way takes today's youth movement very seriously indeed. It may seem that this is not the case if you survey older people rather than your own age peers, but I assure you that the members of the older generation who are pursuing spiritual endeavors certainly do take the youth movement seriously. Several years have passed since a small group of young people joined the Anthroposophical Society, wanting to do more than participate as listeners. They appeared with all the thoughts, sensations, and feelings shared by young people today. This small circle of young people in Stuttgart posed a question to the Anthroposophical movement. What kind of space can you make for us within your movement? I believe I really understood that question. It is not always easy to understand the questions truly seeking individuals ask of our times. And young people are quite rightly asking a number of questions that cannot be formulated completely clearly. Perhaps we will have time to talk about this phenomenon at some point today or in the next 2 days. Although all times have had their youth movements of sorts, there has never been one quite like what is emerging now. When I talk to older people about the burning issues of the modern youth movement, they often comment the young people have always wanted something different, always felt differently from older people. But in the end, everything stays more or less the same. These older people say that today's youth movement is no different from what younger generations have always wanted compared with older generations. Such comments are totally inaccurate. And this gives rise to a huge problem. In all earlier times, at least to a certain extent, even the radical young people involved in youth movements aspired to follow in the footsteps of their elders and were able to acknowledge and respect the institutions older people had established. Today, this is no longer the case. Within and outside academia, young people must find their way into old institutions where they feel totally out of place. Within these institutions, young adults experience the behavior of their elders as mask-like and dead. In contrast to the vitality of their own inner humanity, they experience nothing but masked faces all around them and are driven to despair. The older people they encounter bear the stamp of their specific classes, occupations, or ideals, but do not appear as complete, inwardly alive individuals. You see, that first contact between the youth movement and the anthroposophical movement seemed like predestined connection, and to this day I believe that their inner destiny brought these two movements together. When I call on my own decades of experience in striving for a community of spiritually seeking individuals, and compare it to the youth movement that has appeared since the beginning of the 20th century, I must say that an ever broader cross-section of the youth movement is now feeling something that went almost unnoticed 40 years ago, because it was sensed by only a very few individuals. Your words of welcome beautifully express how difficult life has actually become for young people today. What I am going to say next may sound somewhat abstract, but on the feeling level it is quite concrete. Today we are standing at a turning point in time unlike any other in human history, or even in prehistorical times to a great extent. I am not fond of talking about times of transition, since every moment is a transition from past to future. But in our time, we really are facing an unprecedented turning point. Significant events are taking place less on the conscious level than in the subconscious depths of human souls. And these events are actually spiritual processes. They are not limited to the physical world. It has been said that the so-called Dark Age came to an end at the turning of the 19th to the 20th century, and that a new age of light is beginning. Anyone who can see into the spiritual world knows that this is true. Admittedly, not much light is present yet, but that in no way changes the reality. People are accustomed to the old darkness, which will persist for a while, just as a rolling ball keeps on rolling out of inertia. The inertia-driven aspects of our civilization have one thing in common, namely the need to have everything confirmed or proved. It is difficult to find living words to describe these things, because the things themselves are dead. Our culture accepts only what has been confirmed. Every scientific truth and every scholarly statement must be confirmed, and every individual officially validated. Anyone entering a profession requires outside confirmation or certification. In academia, we say, prove it. If it cannot be proved, it does not count. We cannot understand it. I could say much more about this need for confirmation or proof, which sometimes appears in strange guises. In this connection, let me tell you a little story about when I was young, though not quite as young as you are now. As the editor of a periodical, I became involved in a trivial lawsuit. When I went to court, I represented myself and won the case. The plaintiff, not satisfied with the outcome, decided to appeal. When I appeared in court again, the lawyer for the other side said to me, quote, "We don't need you. We need only your lawyer. Where is he?" Close quote. Now, you see, I had not brought a lawyer with me because I was the person involved, and I thought I could handle it myself. Not good enough. It took all the ingenuity I could muster to get the case postponed. It was made quite clear to me that I must not show up myself next time. I would have to send a lawyer, because it was not customary for defendants to represent themselves on appeal. I went away much relieved and forgot about the whole thing until the day before the case was to be heard again. Unwilling to be told again that I was superfluous, I walked around downtown until I found a lawyer's office and went in. I did not know the man or anything about him. He asked me who recommended him, and I said nobody. I thought any lawyer would be able to handle the case as well as any other, and simply chose the first one I found. He handed me a piece of paper and told me to write down what he should say the following day. I did, and I stayed away from court, as was expected of me. After a few days, I received a letter from him saying that we had won the case. I could tell you hundreds of similar examples from my own life. Your presence as an individual does not matter. What counts is that everything runs according to plan and design. Young people sense this. They do not want everything confirmed and proved. They want something different. They want to replace confirmation and proof with real experience. Older people do not understand what experience means. The word is not in their conversational vocabulary. The very idea of experience, in quotes, horrifies many people, especially when you talk about spiritual experience. This is what we are encountering during the radical transition from the dark age to the age of light. It is quite natural for this transition to manifest in two different movements. That is why the anthroposophical movement and youth movement are linked by destiny. Regardless of their class, occupation, or age, the anthroposophical movement unites people who have sensed that now, at the beginning of the 20th century, individuals must find their place in the cosmos in a very different way. We need not just confirmation and proof. We need actual experience. That is why the meeting of our two movements seems karmic to me. And their meeting led to the development of an anthroposophical youth movement of sorts within the larger anthroposophical movement. Soon after the refounding of the anthroposophical movement at our Christmas conference at the Gertianum, the decision was made to add a youth section to cultivate the sincere and heartfelt interests of today's young adults. This highly gratifying step in the development of our anthroposophical youth movement took place in the first few months of this year. Since then, efforts have stagnated somewhat, owing to difficulties in the youth movement. In the chaos that prevails at present, most notably the spiritual chaos, it is inherently difficult to get anything started. In fact, it is much more difficult than it has ever been before. I'm actually not at all inclined to boast, as those of you know me can attest, but I must say that I have had some very peculiar experiences indeed. In his very kind words of welcome yesterday, Headmaster Bartsch said that the Anthroposophical Society here experiences me like a father, and I must admit there is some truth to that statement. But fathers are old, or at least no longer very young. In contrast, when we started the youth section in Dornach, I encouraged the young people to speak clearly and concisely, and a number of them stood up and spoke very sincerely. Then it was my turn to speak, and at the end of the meeting, someone who knows me well told me that I sounded like the youngest of the young. That is what can happen today. First you are addressed as the old father, and then as the youngest of the young. The concepts have been somewhat fluid, but climbing up and down the ladder of age like this offers opportunities to see what moves the hearts and minds of people of different ages. As I said, the youth section has entered a period of stagnation, but it will come out of it. The reason for this stagnation is that it is truly very difficult for young people to think and formulate what they so clearly feel. Along with spirit, our culture has also lost the individual. From the perspective of the underpinnings of our existence, I can see that young people who have only recently descended from the spiritual world into physical existence are asking something very different of life than those who preceded them did. Why is this so? You do not have to believe me, but for me this is not a matter of mere belief, but of direct perception and insight. You see, before we descend into physical earthly existence, our experiences in the spiritual world are much richer in content and much more powerful than anything we experience on the earth. I do not mean to undervalue earthly life. Without it, freedom could never develop. Nonetheless, life between death and birth is much grander. Souls descending to the earth, the souls living in you, my friends, perceived a tremendously important spiritual movement that runs its course behind physical existence. In anthroposophical contexts, I have called this the Michael movement. The power guiding our time could be given other names, but I call it the power of Michael. In the spiritual guidance of the earth and humankind, this power strives to restructure the soul element on the earth. The people who became so intellectually clever in the 19th century did not suspect that the spiritual world had already abandoned their enlightened soul makeup. Its time was over. A Michaelic community of beings that guide humankind but never descend to the earth is striving to introduce a new soul makeup for humankind. The death of our old civilization has come. The movement for the threefold social order failed due to the death of this old civilization. While that movement was active, I often said that our public life now has a threefold structure consisting of empty phrases, conventions, and routines, instead of spirit, law, and economics. Empty phrases substitute for spirit and culture, and routines, rather than human goodwill or human love, dominate our economic activity. Human beings are stuck in an old soul makeup that is now meant to be superseded by a different one that once again arises out of and is experienced within the individual. Bringing about this change is the goal of the spiritual beings that have assumed leadership of our time and can be recognized in the signs of the times. Souls now descending into earthly bodies have seen the Michael movement. They descend to the earth under its influence. Here, however, they are forced to find their place within a human race that actually excludes the individual or transforms individuals into masks. Thus, the youth movement is a marvelous reminder of the most important impressions of pre-earthly life. Although nothing of these indistinct, subconscious recollections, nothing of this striving for the renewal of the constitution of the human soul, can be found on the earth as yet, this is what is really going on in young hearts and minds today. The anthroposophical movement is an earthly manifestation of the Michael movement and is charged with bringing its intentions to human beings. The anthroposophical movement attempts to look up to the Michael movement in the context of earthly life, whereas today's young people bring recollections of the Michael movement with them from their pre-earthly existence. Karma brings these two groups together. To me, everything that has happened in the anthroposophical movement in connection with the youth movement seems innately determined, not by earthly circumstances alone, but also by spiritual circumstances, inasmuch as they involve human beings. These underlying circumstances explain why your youth movement arouses such great hopes in me for the future of real anthroposophy. Of course, we are forced to realize, repeatedly, that both the anthroposophical movement and the youth movement are mere beginnings. We recently looked on as the Independent Anthroposophical Society was founded alongside the Anthroposophical Society in Germany. The Independent Anthroposophical Society chose or elected its own board of directors, which I believe had 7 members. No, someone just said there were 9. In any case, one after the other, individual members were eased out, and understandably so. In essence, the independent Anthroposophical Society wanted to encompass the youth experience, and the board members questioned one another's ability to have that experience until only three remained. Those three continued to question each other's qualifications. This strange process may sound comical, but it is really very serious. It is also indicative of the joint destiny of the youth movement and the anthroposophical movement. When we explore great questions of destiny, we often make very significant discoveries that are symptomatic of the scope of the destiny in question. When we founded the Anthroposophical Society, our executive council members also quarreled terribly, and I realized that a few of them would soon stand alone if they ushered the others out. That would not have been the end of the matter, however. The disagreements would have continued until the left half of the one remaining member was arguing with the right half, in the case of the Independent Anthroposophical Society, about which side had the real youth experience. This sounds ironic, but it is not. It simply points out that the so-called youth experience lies deep within human souls and cannot necessarily be clearly formulated in words. Clear words have already been spoken to excess in the age of intellectualism. Now, however, we must have experiences. You have claimed the right to persist in a state of unclarity, but your differences must not tempt you to go your separate ways. Even if you do not agree, you must come together and speak your minds. Regardless of what you may feel, think, and perceive as individuals, I would like to ask all of you sitting here to stick together with an iron will. Sticking together is what is most necessary if we hope to accomplish anything today with regard to life's great issues. We cannot be constantly checking to see whether someone else's opinion differs slightly from our own. In spite of the greatest possible differences in feelings and perceptions, we must come together and stay together. Eventually you may realize that the greatest achievement of your youth was knowing how to stay together despite your different perceptions. What young people today yearn for above all else is to find other people. You do not find other human beings, other individuals, because they are all dead behind their masks. Wherever you look, you see only masks. So, of course, you go looking for real human individuals, and your search is tremendously poignant. You look for ways to come together. You seek yourselves in others. This is totally understandable. Human individuals have become spiritually absent, but you look for them because you feel they have to be there somewhere. You look for them primarily in togetherness, in associating with others. But we must not lose sight of the fact that many young people experience a very tragic aspect of this search. They hope to find real human individuals by coming together with others, but togetherness does not fill them with what they are looking for, and they become even lonelier. Two distinct phases of the youth movement emerge, a phase of togetherness and a phase of great loneliness. How many young people today continue to make their way through the world alone, aware that they are not met with understanding anywhere? Now, the fact is that we cannot find the real individual in another person if we do not know how to seek spiritually. The simple truth is that human beings are spiritual beings, and if we approach others superficially, we cannot find them, even if they are there. It is truly sad to watch people pass each other by in life as they do today. We are right to be horrified by the many barbaric aspects of earlier times, but at least back then human beings were able to meet as real individuals. Today this is no longer possible. No one knows the other person. People cannot get along because they do not listen to each other. They just keep yelling in each other's ears, shouting out their own opinions and their own perspectives. All we have today are points of view with no further content, because what is validated by these points of view is unimportant. The longing to perceive with the heart rather than the intellect resonates in young people. So you can trust my sense that a connection of destiny exists between the youth movement and the anthroposophical movement. You young people are coming to anthroposophy not simply to try one more thing after having tried many others. You come out of destiny. That is why I am sure we will be able to work together. We will be able to come together. And no matter what else ensues, the human element in the broadest sense of the word that is alive in young people will have to come to expression. Something completely different would happen if spirit did not well up out of your youthful life. Unless you are filled with spirit, being young is no longer an option after your early 20s. Physiologically, we cannot preserve youth. We must grow old. But we can and must carry something of our youth with us as we age. Our understanding of being young must allow us to take something with us as we grow older. Unless the depths of our souls are touched by spirit, we cannot survive the years between 20 and 30 without falling into gray and abject misery. My greatest concern is whether our work together can help you survive this transition. I have seen any number of people succumb to depression and indifference in their mid-20s. In essence, now that the dark age has ended, the subconscious depths of young souls are crying out for spirit. It is quite all right that many of you are not members of the Anthroposophical Society. I myself was not a member until Christmas, and even then I joined simply because membership is required of those on the Executive Council. But your membership or non-membership is not important. The important point is that you are seeking truly concrete spiritual experiences. So much for my words of introduction. I hope that you will have much more to say. Just as I asked the young people in Dornach to speak out openly so that we could work together, I also ask you to speak frankly. Choose a moderator or proceed however you like. I am sure the Dornach Executive Council will listen attentively to what you have to say. We have much to learn from you as we develop the youth section, and so we will attempt to relate to you as sons, not fathers. Question. Our young friends talked about wanting to do something together, but finding it difficult because they were always so worn out from their professional commitments. Performing the Christmas plays seemed to work best. Then there was some conversation about the Michael idea. Rudolf Steiner. Yes. The question is this. How can we survive in professions as real individuals and with some kind of inner enjoyment without allowing our souls to be deadened? This question is not so easy to answer, but perhaps my own experience can help clarify it. When I was your age, a number of my friends asked the same question. After a period of wandering about on their own, these hotheads, that is what such people who wanted to develop themselves independently were called back then, forced themselves to take professional jobs, and their souls withered terribly. As a rule, I do not enjoy talking about myself, but in this instance it is unavoidable. In the context of my life as a whole, I could not have organized Goethe's literary legacy, nor would the anthroposophical movement have happened, if I had gone into a profession. These experiences make me feel qualified to begin to answer this question. The problem of how to engage in professional activity and simultaneously preserve your inner joy in life is basically unsolvable. You must either enter a modern profession or resign yourself to not having a career. You must also realize that until professional activity is transformed to accommodate real individuals, our professions cannot be expected to provide inner satisfaction or happiness. Give up on the idea of finding satisfaction in a modern profession. This problem must be solved outside work, which means that you must make all the more effort in the little time your job leaves you. You are right. Performing the Christmas plays is very heartening. But being young is not a prerequisite. Some of the people who have taken part in those plays have souls as gray as their hair. Celebrating inspiring Michaelic festivals would help a lot in summoning this energy. This is something we really must manage to do. We can already sense the life of the future in embryonic form, and we need to foster it through festivals of hope and expectation. Hope and expectation, not sharply defined ideals, must bind us together in these festivals. The image of Michael with his guiding eyes and hands and his spiritual armor must stand before us. We must develop such festivals. So why have they not happened? As insistent as I have been about the need of the Anthroposophical movement to give birth to these festivals, I will prevent them from happening until we are strong enough to bring them about with the necessary dignity. The times are too serious for playing around. That is why we must wait until we are strong enough. What we need is not vague, foggy attempts to develop the Michael idea. We need to be conscious that the world of the human soul is being re-established on a different foundation, and that the Michaelic principle is guiding this process. To foster this consciousness in ourselves, we can work together toward a Michaelic festival that creates a home for our hopes for the future and the spirit of expectation. The satisfaction we get from these efforts, which can take place after work, will help us resign ourselves to the unsatisfying aspects of our jobs. I hope what I have said will encourage you, not depress you. Let me describe a unique feature of Anthroposophy. If you are ambitious about self-education, you read books, ordinary scholarly writing. What kinds of claims does this writing make? For one thing, it claims to be clear-cut, to be interpretable, in only one way, regardless of whether the reader is 18, 25, 37, or 80 years old. Its truth is supposed to be absolute, that is, to have the same effect on you regardless of your age. That is not the case with Anthroposophy. If you are 18, you will absorb Anthroposophy differently than you would at 26, because it grows with you. It adapts to the age or youthfulness of the individual. When you become involved in this new worldview or soul makeup, or whatever you want to call Anthroposophy, and let it come to life in groups you form for that purpose, you will realize that it allows you to be young and act young. Our older members complain that young people do not understand Anthroposophy, but that is a good sign. Anthroposophy is meant to be experienced, not understood. But you are clinging to one last bit of conservatism that you must relinquish, namely, the belief that you can find your place in a modern profession and enjoy it. You will need to find another way outside your work. When you finally meet enough like-minded people, their energy will eventually transform the professions into jobs people can enjoy. Question from a participant. On the job, we are forced to be different people. At night we do our exercises and take a few steps up the ladder, and during the day we are dragged down again. Rudolf Steiner. You cannot take your search for satisfaction to work with you. There are simply too few like-minded people to engender the energy it would take to transform our professional working lives. It could happen if everyone who feels, however dimly, that something else is possible would come together. But no matter what profession you are involved in, I am sure you have found that a number of your associates do not feel as you do. They feel no need to spend their evenings in youth gatherings. They are content with their jobs because they have no capacity for dissatisfaction. It does not occur to them that they ought to enjoy their work. During the second half of the 19th century, when I was attending academic conferences, I repeatedly encountered a characteristic phenomenon that drove me to despair. Scholarly discussion was restricted to the few hours of official proceedings. When we socialized, anyone who said a word about work was ostracized. Quote, "No talking shop," close quote, was the rule. Ample evidence that people really were not at all interested in what they did for a living. This is true regardless of your line of work. For the most part, people are victims of their times, and they could still be won over to something better. Modern spiritual movements must become stronger so that people who feel oppressed by their professions are not simply squelched by those with no such needs. So, the more we relinquish instant gratification and put our efforts into developing a spiritual community with a common goal, the better it will be. That is what we need to keep in mind. Question. A participant asked about the difference between young and old. Old anthroposophists want to consume spirit, while the young want to create out of it. The others want to put on the brakes. They are sarcastic about what young people are creating. Rudolf Steiner. This contrast between young and old need not be so pronounced. Tolerance of others seems the best approach to me, as I said before, since we cannot possibly fit everyone into the same mold. It is inevitable that those temperamentally suited to it will attempt to reach out into the world on the basis of what is available to us. It would be sad if that were not the case. On the other hand, we must acknowledge significant differences in strength. There will always be stronger elements, individuals who are capable of taking action long before others trust themselves to act. Comprehensive action, however, will be possible only if these different shades of temperament come together, which is possible in our context. If it happens, the anthroposophical movement will be able to accomplish a great deal. Unfortunately, it is not happening yet. I think that if the youth movement finds its way to anthroposophy, these different shades of temperament will come into their own. I personally have no objections to any youth movement based on the temperament you represent. I have absolutely nothing to say against it. In my own youth, however, I saw young people beating their heads against the wall. Subjecting yourself to an unknown destiny is all right for those who want to do it, but it is not for everyone. Constructive action, however, will be based less on criticizing those who act differently than on pointing out positive accomplishments. It is truly important to acknowledge positive steps. Even among the young, people do too little of this. Your positive accomplishments remain unknown in wider circles. This is a danger, even though it is not as crass among young people as it is in sects. We must avoid sectarianism. The universally human element must always prevail. Question. A participant asked about the differences in age, 18 to 25, and educational level of the participants. Rudolf Steiner. Basically, the fault lies in the fact that egotism plays such a tremendously great role in our culture. As a result, people cannot feel their way into other people and their situations. Each person talks and acts only out of himself or herself. Just think about how different everything suddenly becomes if you manage to feel your way into the other person. Let us assume a 60-year-old is talking with a 5-year-old boy. I really think the 5-year-old is much more able to feel his way into the 60-year-old than the other way round. We need to learn to creep under another person's skin. Anthroposophy allows us to do this because it is flexible. When you have spiritual interests in common, the age difference between 15 and 25 easily disappears, especially after you have been together for a while. But when you have only egotistical interests to keep you together, 15-year-olds and 25-year-olds cannot understand each other. The point is to overcome egotism and discover a certain degree of objectivity. Egotism is the signature of our time, but it cannot persist when we begin to be truly interested in other individuals. We can overcome egotism completely if we first manage to overcome it in the context of something difficult to internalize, such as anthroposophy. In this process, we strip off egotism, and we can then find our way into the other person. This is one of the fruits of anthroposophical efforts. You find yourselves unable to understand each other because you are not meeting as real human individuals. If you are not an individual but simply a template, which is more or less the case today if you are 25, how are you supposed to understand others? If you are 25 and a graduate student, you are not an individual. You are a clothes rack, decked out with your college entrance exams and your fear of defending your dissertation. At 15, you are a clothes rack laden with report cards your parents still have to sign. These objects do not understand each other. But we do understand other people as soon as we meet as individuals. The same is true of different professions. We are not true individuals, we are simply impressions of different circumstances. The significance of the youth movement lies in the fact that it does away with all this. It wants individuals. When you are not at work, you want to be individuals, and you will be when you clearly grasp these ideas. Hermann Bahr once described what it is like to be a newcomer in a big city. He was invited here, there, and everywhere, someplace different each day of the week, until he could not tell the lady on his right from the lady on his left, or the Sunday ladies from the Monday ladies. They all became confused in his mind. In those social circles, people all look very much alike because they all reflect the same circumstances. Question. Should we simply give up on having a career and devote ourselves to anthroposophy? Or is there some way to imbue our professions with warmth? Rudolf Steiner. That is a very individual issue. You must never hesitate to do what you recognize as right. Sometimes it is possible and sometimes not. If you can do it, you should already have a sense of the possibility, and then you can go ahead. Of course, you can also become a martyr, though I would not recommend that as a general rule. It would be different if everyone did it, but if only one person out of 100 is prepared for martyrdom, nothing comes of it because the other 99 shoot that person down. Your question can be answered only on an individual basis. For me, the answer was to avoid entering a profession. Of course, you can say, that means I am not qualified to give advice on the subject, but I have been in the position of making that choice. The fact is, however, that professional activity has become so deadened and life so complex that it is difficult to accomplish much from within a profession. But if you have a good nose for the possibilities, you can do it. Comment from the questioner. I am not attacking anthroposophy. We must simply understand the positive aspects of the youth movement. Rudolf Steiner. The point here is simply that anthroposophy can help the youth movement experience how to act positively, in harmony with the entire cosmos, by excluding negativity. By its very nature, anthroposophy cannot be adopted by anyone who does not experience it, so it excludes activity that is not free. I have never made a point of proselytizing on behalf of anthroposophy. I simply stated what I knew. I know that if I talk to 1,000 people, what I say will really take root in only 5. This has never worried me. Something similar happens with the fish in the sea. Of 1,000 eggs, only 2 or 3 survive to become adult herring. If success is your goal, you will not achieve it. Your cause itself must motivate you. The attitude I hope to see prevail among us is tolerance, allowing each individual to do what he or she can without saying, young people should not do this, or the youth movement shouldn't be like that. We need to bring together as many people as possible, and people should act out of their own individualities to do whatever they can. The difference between 15 and 25 can be overcome if you are all young, as in fact you are. What makes you different from each other is not very great. You have a basic structure in common. After all, the others who have not joined your movement are going to the movies instead of youth group meetings. Another important point is that too much thought may have gone into providing a form for your activity. Sincere individual relationships are much more important than any form. If you like each other, you spend time together without looking for forms. It may even be a mistake to look for a form. It is important to be able to come together and enjoy each other's company, even when you disagree significantly. Human feelings provide the healthiest form for interaction. In fact, any attempt at formal programming will disrupt the youth movement. We have considered many possible activities for the youth section at the Gertianum, and many of them will become realities once a certain stagnation has been overcome. A striving for light, and not necessarily an abstract spiritual light, became apparent when Kali Yuga came to an end. If this striving is so strong in us that we cannot help but pursue it, we need no further forms. Having specific forms is only disruptive. The life within individuals must emerge and merge. Even if only two or three people out of a large gathering are truly enthusiastic about their cause, others will gather around them. The individual human element must emerge. We will surely find it if we come together with enthusiasm and earnest intentions, instead of with floppy arms, legs, and brains. If instead of expecting others to entertain us, we arrive expecting to accomplish something, that is already enough of a form. It is so difficult to speak in general programmatic terms. In real life, everything depends on the vitality we bring to what we do. If you are active in a profession, and you have to make an extra effort to bring life and vitality into it, your profession will wear you out. We need enthusiasm, and especially the enthusiasm of young people, since it is so sorely lacking in older people. Nothing moves. Old bodies are full of lead. But I am sure you young people can generate enthusiasm simply by resolving to talk about your individual ideas in the near future with the others present here. That is enough of a form. And we will be sending all kinds of messages and questions from the Gertianum, which will give you something to do again. So look for opportunities to meet and skip as few meetings as possible. For you, perhaps the first principle of organization is this. We have X number of friends who resolve not to skip our gatherings. That is a form in itself. Question. A participant asked about the young people of the Wandervogel movement. Rudolf Steiner. In reality, there is no need to make a distinction. The Wandervogel go out into nature, seeking impressions of nature, seeking to experience the human element in the natural world, and so on. If, after having these experiences for a while, they go to the other extreme, not wanting to have anything to do with nature and simply reading books, it means that they also did not engage properly in the first phase. Today people can travel all over the world and see nothing. I could show you striking examples of English Wandervogel trips to Italy where the participants saw nothing. They visited galleries, but saw nothing. I have met a number of Wandervogel like that. To see anything, you have to have a heart. But if you are prevented from being a whole human being as early as elementary school, you do not see what is there in the natural world. When you become responsive again to everything in nature, you will also find things entitled How to Know Higher Worlds that other people do not find. This book was written to include nature, not to exclude it. People have told me they could tell from the style that I used a typewriter because I did not have enough time in the day for writing. This is certainly not justified criticism. I do most of my writing in bed, and I have never taken a typewriter to bed with me. That would look rather strange, wouldn't it? But what is important is how things are conceived, and nature was certainly included when this book was conceived. Title, How to Know Higher Worlds, is definitely a Wandervogel book. I do not see any conflict here based on whether one is a Wandervogel or not. By experiencing nature as the Wandervogel do, you will also experience the book. It was not meant to be a book, it simply looks like one. The only way to disseminate some things is in black and white. If the youth movement is a success, we will also be able to get away from using printer's ink. We must break through to the human element. But the Anthroposophical Society cannot do everything at once, can it? Unfortunately, its efforts in this direction have been unsuccessful. It was never my intention to permit printing of contents that are best communicated from person to person. I'm so glad no one is taking notes today. There have always been people who are willing to take notes, and in some cases, bad transcriptions were circulated. So in the end, I did have to find a way to get the material printed. The end of part 10.